TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness.
Ilan Pappé, there is still time to stop the Gaza genocide. Frank Bavat interviews the Israeli historian Ilan Pappé. The bombing of Gaza by Israeli planes and missiles had just begun when Bavat and Pappé had this conversation on October 15, 2023. Ilan Pappé is best known for his book, The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine, published at Oxford, 2006. It is the history of the 1948 Palestine-Israel War and how around 1 million people were expelled from their homes at gunpoint. Civilians were massacred and hundreds of Palestinian villages were deliberately destroyed. Pappé had used newly declassified Israeli archives to prove this case. Frank Bavat is a journalist, producer, and activist. He has worked on books with Noam Chomsky, Ilan Pappé, Angela Davis, and others. Here's his conversation with Ilan Pappé.
Hi, Ilan.
Hi. Nice to meet you again, Frank.
Same. I wanted to talk to you today because it's been pretty much exactly a week since Hamas and other factions of Palestinian resistance launched what's, in my lifetime anyway, is an unprecedented attack on Israel. I mean, this operation seems to have shocked everyone. I mean, anyone I know, Palestinian, Israelis, diplomats, you know, researchers, activists, everyone seemed to be in shock at the scale and the planning of this operation. So I wanted to ask you, as like, were you shocked as well? But also, since the attack happened, hysteria has taken over. And in these moments, at least for this one, it seems like the people that are trying to give context, to be rational, are seen as the monsters, and the people that are highly emotional and hysterical seem to be the good guy. You've written also a piece for the Palestine Chronicle talking about moral compass. So yeah, it's like two questions in one. Like, how surprised, shocked were you by this operation? And can you talk to us about the critical need in these times in particular for moral compass?
Yes. Of course, I was surprised by which the Hamas was able to carry out its operation. I was not surprised by the fact that the Hamas has not given up the resistance. And I never bought into the theory that the Hamas has stopped its resistance fighting. But of course, I could, like anyone else, I could not imagine such a large-scale attack, nor did I imagine that the Israeli army would crumble so easily. After all, the Hamas has taken over 11 military bases before going to the settlements themselves, which I think was a mistake, but we can talk about it later. But I think the military achievement is incredible, unimaginable in many ways, given the balance of power. So in that respect, I was surprised. Like many others, I was not surprised by the fact that Palestinians who are fighting against Israeli colonization, occupation, and ethnic cleansing would do all they can to stop it. And liberation struggles are not always done through peaceful means. Armed struggle is an important part of a liberation struggle. And therefore, again, I was surprised by the timing, by the scale, by the success, but not by the fact that Palestinians have not stopped resisting. In fact, I still think that we might still, witness a third uprising also in the West Bank and not just in Gaza. People would not reconcile for living for so many years under occupation, and especially not under siege, like the one that was imposed on Gaza. Now, to your second question, I think you're absolutely right. I think that it's more than just emotion. It's one particular emotion that seems to be licensed by the West, and especially the Western political elites, when it comes to the event of Saturday, and that is revenge. Revenge as a strategy. I don't recall in history when the international community, instead of showing solidarity, which is understandable, with civilian victims of any conflict, has shown solidarity with this base idea of revenge. Revenge that is translated into a genocide, into collective punishment. It's quite surprising to see how this is unfolding. The case may be, and I'm not sure, that those who decided to don the Parliament House in London with the Israeli flag, or the Eiffel Tower with the Israeli flag, were thinking about the Ukraine, and they were thinking, okay, we are showing solidarity with the many Israeli civilians who were killed at the surprise attack. I can understand it, although one should ask, where was this solidarity with the thousands of Palestinian victims that were killed? But maybe they don't understand how this message is being understood in Israel. In Israel, this message is understood. Now you have a free hand to inflict genocidal policies on the ground. And I think that is where the moral compass, not just of your moral compass or my moral compass, but especially the moral compass, if it all exists, among political elites in the West, should come into being. You should know that you carry responsibility for what goes on the ground, not just the Israelis, because the Israelis say to themselves, oh, we can do what we want now. We have a free hand. It reminds me in the way that the Israeli commanders were thinking about the ethnic cleansing of Palestine in 1948. They were convinced that because of the Holocaust, and unfortunately, I think they were right. They were convinced that because of the Holocaust, the international community would allow them to do what they want in Palestine in 1948. And I see a similar situation now, of course, and the Israelis contribute to it by comparing what happened on Saturday to the Holocaust, which, of course, is a terrible abuse of the Holocaust memory. But that's kind of recreating these ideas that Jews who are victims of either Germans or Palestinians, the international community allows them to commit any crime they want without any rebuke. The moral compass for people like us is, of course, that we know why we support the Palestinians. We'll continue to support the liberation movement. That doesn't mean that we cannot voice here and there questions about certain logics behind things, but we also have to understand that we are not living in Gaza. We were not sieged and ghettoized for so many years. So we also have to be careful when we have this more constructive conversation with our Palestinian friends.
Thanks, Ilan. How worried are you about what's going to happen in the next few days in Gaza? We know historically that to do or to commit genocide, what comes before is propaganda and tropes, right? We have heard in the last week many stories that, as far as I know, only a few or a tiny few have been verified. And again, I think it's in these exact moments that we need to be very precise on the truth and on facts. The story about Hamas beheading 40 babies that's been repeated all over and has been proven false. The fact that Palestinians are animals and will be treated as such. All of these words and being repeated over and over again are preparing not only the nation of Israel, but the world for the massacre that Israel is about to commit. And also, I was reading this morning that the US has now sent a second US carriers to, you know, Israel to prevent escalation. So for me, what it means is there's like this small enclave that's going to be genocided, and we're going to be all around it for people not to see it. So they're highly complicit it's more than sending $3 billion per year of mostly military aid. It's now being actively military complicit in what it's about to take place. How worried are you?
So I'm very worried, not just for the next 48 hours, but for the next week or 2 weeks, or maybe even 3 weeks, in which the civilian space of Gaza would be the killing fields of the Israeli army. So I'm terribly worried about the genocidal intentions, and rightly you're right. These are manifested by the discourse that the Israelis are using. In fact, if you listen to the Israeli radio and television, and politicians and commentators, some of them usually more logical than others, who keep saying these people are worse than the Nazis. I mean, that's the main message that they are conveying. And that, of course, gives license to do whatever you want to do. So yes, this is highly, highly worrying. And if you add to this the two facts, one, that the whole myth of safe routes out of Gaza was already shown to be untrue 2 days ago when the Israeli bombed Salah ad-Din Road, which was supposed to be a safe route, and killed a lot of civilians there, including children and women. So there are no safe routes. Secondly, the situation of the water and energy and the hospitals would add to the disastrous reality already on the ground. And finally, one can add the fact that it's quite possible that the Egyptians would only allow several humanitarian cases to go through, so people would really be stuck in that enclave, as you call it. And yes, I do think you're right. I think exactly because the Israeli operation, and we know it from the past, the Israeli operation would be incremental. It would be stage by stage. I don't expect the one day of genocide and that's it. It would be far more sophisticated in that respect and would mesmerize the world in such a way that they would say, okay, yes, you know, unfortunately things happened yesterday, but this is not the real nature of the operation. And unfortunately, with such cases in history, you understand the cumulative impact of genocidal policies, especially the Israeli kind of genocidal policies. We know it from the history of Palestine. You understand at the end of the operation, not during the operation. In fact, the Israelis talk about the next week or two or three even weeks as the repeat of the 48 war. And what that means, if you remember the history of the 48 war, there was not one operation. They had code names for about 25 operations during 1948. All of them were operations of ethnic cleansing. And that's why it was very difficult to blame the Israeli for doing an ethnic cleansing on a total scale, because it was kind of divided. So I'm very fearful both for the real human consequences and the way the world would react because of the nature it would be done. Of course, you can always hope, because this, and with this I would end this answer, the civil society, I think, including in the global north and in the west, I don't think are being fooled by it. I don't think the civil society has lost its moral compass. I think a lot of people around the world, including the United States, understand the more complex reality and have not lost the context of what happened, which is the most important thing. The question is, what about the policymakers, those who sent the aircrafts to the area? And of course, we are back to this question. Can the civil societies in the West impact the policies of the governments? Because if they cannot, there is no moral compass to the governments of the West when it concerns Palestine.
Can I ask you something about, I mean, you were in the military yourself in Israel, you are an Israeli historian. You've then studied, you know, military tactics, military warfare, you've called in 48 the ethnic cleansing on Palestine. I think people have to understand, I mean, what does the Israeli government and the Israeli army mean when it says we are going to eradicate Hamas? Hamas is not a building, right? Hamas is not a car. Hamas is a political party, is hundreds of members. It's a military wing. What does eradicating Hamas means? I don't understand it.
Yeah, I think that they have an internal debate between two models. One model is the model of Beirut in 1982, when they forced the PLO headquarters out of Lebanon, you know, eventually sieging Beirut and forcing Arafat and the whole leadership of the PLO to move to Tunis. I would call it, in bracket commas, the moderate option, that they would hope to get such a military dominance that the Hamas leadership would not be able to return to Gaza. I think the more extreme among them, whether these are generals or politicians, are thinking about massive killings of those they regard as Hamas militants, and such a destruction that the Hamas would have no presence whatsoever in the Gaza Strip. I don't think this scenario will unfold, by the way. I don't think it's possible. Hamas is not only a movement, it's also an ideology. And it's not just an ideology, it's part of the liberation ideology. Namely, it will exist as long as the occupation and the colonization exist. So you cannot by force uproot it. You can definitely inflict a terrible military defeat on it in Gaza, but you cannot eradicate Hamas, nor can you eradicate the Palestinian National Movement. You can maybe temporarily make it disappear from Gaza or Gaza City, let's say. But what then? What then? One should think about, and I think that the second model, I said the first model was Lebanon, 82. I think the second model is the Taliban in Afghanistan, the American attack on Afghanistan in 2003. And that's a very important historical lesson. You know, America said, we will uproot and kill and eliminate the Taliban in Afghanistan. Well, we're in 2023. After hundreds of thousands of Afghan people died, the Taliban is in power. But of course, leaders don't go through processes of learning, unfortunately, and don't see these connections, which are very clear. So I think what they have in mind is huge force, massive killing, massive expulsions. The end result would be worse, I'm afraid, than ethnic cleansing. It would be much more closer to our definition of genocide than ethnic cleansing, which is really worrying and frightening. And there's still time to stop it. I mean, I know a lot of people were already killed, but we're not at the magnitude of the disaster that can unfold, you know. So it's very important for all of us, with all our means, to try and persuade the world that this is what's going to happen, you know, because before it's too late. But I think that's what they have. They have in mind, as I say, minimal model of Beirut, maximum model of the way Afghanistan was attacked. In both cases, I think they will fail politically, strategically. They won't fail militarily. I mean, Hamas cannot stop the Israeli army. It's now almost 360,000 soldiers that are going to go in. They will occupy Gaza. I mean, anybody who thinks that Hamas can stop Israel from occupying the Gaza Strip doesn't know what they're talking about. They won't be able to stop it. And they will find the tunnel city, so to speak, and they will destroy it. Unfortunately for the families, and I know some of them in Israel, I don't think they really care about those who were taken to Gaza. I mean, they keep saying that they do, but I don't think this will be a consideration. I'm very, very sorry to say it. These are really innocent people who are. I'm not talking about the soldiers. I'm talking about the civilians. And this will not stop the Israelis, even if the Hamas, which I don't think they will, execute them publicly or something like that. As you say, there's so much fake news about all of this. This is what they're going to do. The message is back home to the Israelis, here is the revenge. And the revenge has to be visible and mighty. It's not a military objective, but this is what you hear from them. And therefore, I think that's the way we should approach it.
I've got two last questions, two quick ones, or maybe not that quick, but do you think Hamas had a long-term end game with this operation? They must have been planning this for months or maybe years. They must have known that the response of Israel will be to try to eradicate Gaza or flatten Gaza. So do you think they've got, I mean, they've got a lot of hostages, right? But you were saying that you think this time, and it showed, you know, a lot of them have already died because of the IDF bombardments, right? But so do you think Hamas, that must have planned the next step, which was Israeli invasion of Gaza, had a long-term endgame? And then what about the other regional players?
Yes, I think the other strategic hope of the Hamas was that the Hezbollah and the West Bank would join in into this and turn it into kind of a third uprising with the support of Hezbollah in the north. It's very difficult to predict whether they are correct in it. Definitely any day into the military operation in the Strip puts a lot of pressure on Hezbollah to intensify its involvement. It's very clear from what they have done until now that they are very careful not to hit Israel itself in order to start another Lebanon war. It's very cynical, but one should say that both sides so far are abiding by this game. If I hit only your army, I'm hitting only your army, you know, kind of cynical game, but that's very precarious. It can deteriorate. So yes, Hamas might be right. The problem with this, and I'm talking about from a military point of view, is that the Hezbollah lost the surprise element. Israel is very well prepared in the north. And I think that's one of the reasons Hezbollah is very limited so far in its operation. Iran, I don't know how far they will go. I learned in the last 20 years that the Iranian leaders are very good with words. I don't know if it's a wrong gamble by the Hamas, because knowing the people in Gaza and people like in the Jenin refugee camp, when you are with your back to the wall and you think you anyway you're going to be eliminated one way or another, you feel like you have, it doesn't really matter, and it's much better to fight than to be idle and passive. And I think that means that it's not really a strategy that has all the scenarios in mind, but it's one that you always hope. And this was true about, by the way, by the secular liberation movement of Palestine. You always hope that this kind of crying out would wake up the world to interfere. So far, it hasn't worked. Who knows? Who knows? And they will never stop trying, because, you know, the elimination of the Palestine and the Palestinians is an incremental process that goes on since 1948. It hasn't ended. And they will try, and they will not disappear. And they will continue to resist. I have no doubt about that.
Last question, Ilan. Does this moment change everything?
It's a good question. I was thinking about it myself. I think the basic context of what we're witnessing in Palestine has not changed by the events. I mean, they're very dramatic, they're very worrying, and one cannot underrate the significance of what goes on. But the context has remained, and the context is that Israel is a settler colonial state that deprives millions of Palestinians of their basic rights. The Palestinians are a colonized people who try to liberate themselves and decolonize the country. This context has not changed after Saturday. It was the right context for analyzing the situation before, and it's the right context for analyzing the future. You only hope that at least one message should have been conveyed clearly to the Israelis, and it may happen after the revenge and everything, that even if you have the strongest army in the Middle East, you cannot secure your population as long as you are in apartheid, occupying, colonizing state. This is a message which, of course, the Israelis are not digesting now. It's understandable. I don't expect them to digest them. But who knows? Who knows? Maybe in the longer term, they could not avoid the analysis. However, they will explain to themselves what they call the surprise. They would say the army was failing. Netanyahu is responsible. By the way, this is nonsense. Netanyahu is responsible for many things. The fact that the army was so easily taken was nothing to do with Netanyahu. It has to do with the fact that you cannot, by force, colonize and oppress millions of people. They will find a way to fight back, even if that would be a short-term victory. And in this respect, no, I don't think things have changed. And the same danger of what's happening in Palestine to the rest of the Arab world, to the relationship inside Europe between communities, to the relation with the Muslim world, all this is still on the table. And Palestine is still an issue of injustice that has to be resolved, not just for the sake of the Palestinians, but for the sake of many, many other people in the world who see Palestine as a symbol of injustice or struggle for justice.
Thanks, Ilan. I think that's a very good way to end. You have, and both of us have known how what Palestine means for the, in a way, the global justice movement. You know, Mandela said it himself, you know, we won't be free until Palestinians are free. So, yeah, thanks, Ilan. And I hope you, your family is okay in Israel and we'll speak soon. Thanks, Ilan.
Inshallah, I hope so.
Hey,
okay, good to talk to you. Ilan. Bye.
That was a conversation between Frank Bavat and the Israeli historian Ilan Pappé, author of The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine. Pappé was able to prove that transfer, aka ethnic cleansing, was an integral part of a carefully planned strategy in the 1948 war that led to the founding of Israel. He used newly declassified Israeli archives to prove his case. Ilan Pappé is professor of history at the University of Exeter, UK. Frank Bavat is a journalist, producer, and activist. You can watch the 28-minute video of this interview under the title, There Is Still Time to Stop the Gaza Genocide, on Frank Bavat's YouTube channel. And my wishes, and dare I say prayers, are that a ceasefire has been agreed upon since their conversation on October 15, 2023, and the day you find and hear this program on your local radio station or on the internet. Peace.
You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening.